Return to Northmoor, episode 15, running time 39 minutes.
Hi, this is Kim.
And this is Tim.
Welcome to the Return to Northmoor podcast.
This time, actual play of Entering the Temple of Art Part 2. Our adventurers have just left the map room and are heading for the Hall of Masters.
So you head back into the hall, and you head to the end of the hall where there is an opening. And a stair, much like the one that you came up, descends down into another chamber. This time, instead of a giant crystal column, there is actually liquid pouring from the ceiling down into a pool below. And you're guessing it must be infinitely recycling because it just keeps going and the pool's not filling up and the water's not coming out. It's pleasantly musical, actually. You're guessing that the liquid is mercury or something like that because it's silvery and
it
very viscous.
Is in here, really. We're shut the tall glass of that.
Art on the walls?
Yes, as before with all different types of art. The other thing that is interesting is that the floor in front of this pool, there are 7 pillows set in front of it, and each of them has sort of knee marks in it, as if someone was kneeling in front of this.
I'll start down the right staircase.
So you go down the staircase and arrive at the bottom. You see a passage leading off to the right, and then there is another passage that is arched and covered with metal onlay. You may have seen hallways like from Italian architecture or whatever that have kind of a coffered ceiling made of wood. This is like that, but made of all sort of heavy, metalish, riveted. I guess not so much riveted, but put together with pounded joints.
Examine the floor for mud tracks.
The mud tracks lead down the main passage, and there is the side passage leading off to the right.
As we're slowly making our way through, I'm looking for more indications of this other temple and other peoples that might be related to it.
Okay, everybody make a perception check as you get down the stairs.
Oh, natural one.
That's a 9.
17.
Finally!
All right.
Made one.
Rogan, as you head down the stairs, you see a picture of a person whom you presume is one of the emperors of this city, kings or whatever they call themselves, and he is wearing a crown that is in that shape of the gear symbol of Arathis. It's a big sort of sun-shaped crown, and he's being carried on a litter as before, and again, there's the 19 guards all around him. One of the guards is wielding a heavy, heavy axe, and you are drawn immediately to the livery that he is wearing. It is exactly familiar to you.
Part of it is
correct.
I imagine that at this point, Rogan kind of tunes out the world for a moment and just stares at this thing,
entranced, so to speak.
We've all had our moment in this place so far.
The musical tinkling of the mercury fountain lulls you as you just kind of imagine that livery, and you see the corner of it, and you just kind of stretch it out in your mind and realize that there's no doubt that unless there's another pattern that's exactly like it everywhere but in that corner, this must be the livery that you were originally in.
Look how cool the mercury fountain.
And how high up it's falling from.
Yeah,
you won't put your hand in it either.
Yeah.
It falls in a stream though, right? Not in like bits?
It's just lava lamp. Yeah, more lava lamp. Yeah. Kind of a combination between a lava lamp and almost like strings of mercury going down.
It's otherworldly.
Often when you see a water drop hit a body of water and there's that kind of cup-shaped upspray, with the mercury fountain, it's the same. It's just almost like slow motion, and then it kind of falls back onto itself. It's really quite beautiful, and it's lit strangely. Rogan is entranced with a particular picture. You don't see any other photos that even show the central temple.
Or stay the course. Maybe they knew where they were going.
Are there muddy tracks about?
There are muddy tracks that lead down the central path. You do hear noise coming from the side chamber.
Rogan.
Rogan's probably pulling out of his pouch or some such thin little scrap of tabard he has.
Rogan. Hey. You all right?
I think there's a pretty good chance this might be the same Harrowby that was with this.
Right.
Yeah.
The colors are right. You sure?
No, but it's closest I've ever found. I mean, it's black. It's the side of what I thought was some kind of dragon or gargoyle or something.
Can we see any more of the picture?
Yeah, you can see. The reason he noticed is that it's a particularly large painting, and the guy is carrying a shield with that exact heraldry on it. It would be a heck of a coincidence for it to look that close and not be it.
Well, the ghost did say that the survivors escaped, and they went on to found other houses.
I don't know. It's the closest I've come to finding out who those people were, or are, or if they existed.
You also notice, with your study of such things, that physical features of the person depicted in the painting and Rogan
match.
Definitely, I wouldn't say they're exact match, but there's definitely a family resemblance.
The Roman nose and non-lobed ears.
That could be an ancestor.
And the bigger question is, are they good guys or the bad guys?
Does it matter if they were good guys or bad guys? You know what you are. Isn't that all that matters?
We don't know if this is your heraldry or your prisoner.
It's worth investigating in the future, though. That is, of course, if you want to know what your past is, because by no means does your past define your future.
So this is exactly what I figured. part of me just doesn't care, honestly. Part of me looks at something like this and thinks, hey, look, finally, after 12 years now, something. A clue that there was a reality to what happened some time ago. I'm just wasting time, though. We should go.
In that clip, we heard an example of how to tie a character's past in with some of the things that are in the room.
Wick's character, Rogan, was found washed up on the shore near the outpost with a dead man who looked very similar to him and a scrap of heraldry clutched in his hand. That scrap of heraldry is what we were discussing matching part of the painting we saw.
So you can really work with a character that has essentially no past by giving them clues as to what their real life was like. We're also entering a discussion as to whether one's past can define one's future. And the character Rogan is very concerned with that because he wants to be one of the good guys.
And he's concerned that the people in the painting may not have been.
You can make them whatever you'd like. In the next clip, after Rogan comes out of his reverie, the characters move on.
Well, they're heading into the residence hall. They've heard some squishy noises coming from that direction and followed some muddy tracks. They are approaching the first door that they see. Now, the map that they were following is slightly different than the one that you saw in the show materials, but the effect is the same. Also, you're going to hear reference to Maggiano's bag. That is where I used to keep all of my D&D minis before I sorted them out. So there's some free advertising for Maggiano's. If they want to send us a check, feel free.
Those of you listening at home, a new map has dawned on the table.
That we now can't see part of.
Well, forget what you've seen.
Well done.
Pay no attention to the man behind the notepad. Alright, so you guys are coming up the corridor there.
I don't know where people are, I'm just showing people places.
Perfect, that's exactly how I was going to recommend.
Alright, and you see a hideous blood stain on the floor in front of you. I think you can see it on the map there.
Is the blood coming from Maggiano's bag?
Yes, the blood is coming from the Maggiano's bag. The blood just looks absolutely foul. Looks like someone just got shredded here or something.
But no bits.
No feet this time.
Nope.
Is it red or brown?
7 days.
It's this.
It's brown.
On the door, which is closed, you see scrawled in blood the squiggly random lines.
Are they the same every time? Is it a symbol? Or is it just kind of squiggly random lines?
It's a symbol.
So it's not exactly random. It's just has the appearance of being.
They're random enough in the same way to always convey the same meaning. The door's closed. There's a hallway leading off to your left. And you see another door just down the hallway. The rooms are slightly lit. And that kind of light glow that you had in the original hallway.
I hate to leave doors closed behind us.
Very well.
Okay. You reach for the knob, and as your hand is coming to it, you see symbols appear over the handle. They're literally just glowing letters of a language.
Squiggles?
Yeah, they're not the kind of squiggles that are on there, but more like letters in a language you don't know that just appear over
the
table.
So they just sort of...
Yep. And, yep.
What do you make of this?
They appear to be glowing the symbols when you move their hand close to them. Is there a lock?
I stamp.
There is not.
And then they wonder why I go bashing through doors.
Do I notice a pattern in the circle?
They appear to be letters. Go ahead and make an arcana check.
I'm going to get up close and personal. Move me up.
You recognize them as the a particular script that you've seen before. It is called Farspeak.
Oh, lovely.
And the symbols say all or nada.
All or nothing.
No, all or nada. Nada.
I'm going to grasp the doorknob and repeat that, all or nada.
Okay.
And then turn it.
And then the door slides open. And you hear...
I'll just push it open then and...
Okay, and you see a young woman's body on the bed, and a tentacled creature has crashed through the wall and is starting to chow down on her body. It looks up at you, and these disgusting semi-insectoid eyes look at you, and its tentacles flare and prepares for battle.
The last clip really exemplifies how our group approaches doors and not charging in, despite what Wick's character Rogan has to say about charging into doors.
He is of the belief that you should just open doors and move on, but everyone else seems to think that checking the doors first is a good idea.
When you don't have a lot of hit points, it's wise to make sure that whatever's on the other side of the door isn't going to eat you.
In this case, it was going to eat you. It was a carrion crawler. I was using the trained carrion crawler D&D mini, which is an excellent mini. I highly recommend it if you're going to run this encounter. See if you can locate one on eBay or on one of the mini's trading sites, because it is a really great mini, and that's part of what Jeff was saying awesome about when he saw it hit the table.
So this clip really does show how creepy this scene can be.
I agree. I did cut the glowing symbols around the door out of the final write-up. I thought that was a little too sci-fi, a little bit too much, but if you like it, feel free to use it. So in the clip you're about to hear, we have some fire centipedes coming up from behind rather than the other carrion crawler and the carrion crawler swarms. I ended up changing it to the second crawler and the swarms to make the encounter a little more thematically consistent. I also didn't really like the way that the fire centipedes worked out, and this was before I had built a whole lot of new monsters, and now being much more comfortable with how easy that is, it was much more fun to create the carrion crawler swarm than use these fire beetles right out of the book.
So, as the creature flares its tentacles and looks at you, you hear a skittering insectoid sound coming from the hallway, and you see two centipede-like creatures, their chitinous bodies glowing with a fiery burning look, come ripping around the corner. May it open the door.
In our next clip, the fighter charges in and confronts the tentacled beastie.
Alright, so the creature will charge, Rogan. Go ahead and throw him out there.
Boy, he squeezes through there, huh?
Yeah, he does, and his body actually goes like this on the sides of the doorway.
It's on the
door. Yeah, it hangs over the door. And he actually kind of goes up on the side a little bit as he comes through. You're pretty sure he can cling to whatever surface you would like to cling to.
I don't like this thing.
Its tentacles scream out away from its mouth, head for Rogan's flesh, getting a AC 17, I think you have a 19.
I do.
So that will be a miss, even with the 18 for the charge. From this creature. So, Rogan, you're up.
Tide of Iron.
Try talking to it.
Parley.
Strike at it. 19 armor class.
That will miss. Seth.
I will step a few squares closer and use a Lance of Faith against it. A 19 versus its reflex.
That will hit.
Ooh, and that was an hit.
Nice.
And as a free action, I will use my Channel Divinity Divine Fortune for next turn. Give me a plus one attack roll.
Great.
Take a shot at the close dude here.
Do you need a 13?
11?
Sorry. Tempest.
Cursing them. Cursing the close one here.
Curse
as a
you.
Minor act. Man. Ooh, at a whole
Children
9.
Come out sideways.
Versus Fort.
That will miss.
Breakfast cereal. Be
they
soggy.
Will move up to within 3 squares of the people in the hallway there. They kind of hunker down, and you see the fire seems to be building up inside them. And giant gouts of flame come from their internal organs and head toward the people in the hall.
Fabulous.
We're either going to get burnt or we're going to get gout.
Yeah, go ahead and move them up one more square. That way they can get everything.
Make a save versus indigestion.
So, starting with Tempest, that will be a miss from blast number one. Yay. And a miss from blast number two.
Yay.
The next will be Ashkin. Ashkin will take one of the hits. 13 points of damage as the fire hits you, and then who's the last person in the hallway? Ah, I'm going to take one of the hits. 13 points of damage.
13 hits.
The hideous green creature will go ahead and reach its tentacles out. Oh, and we'll definitely grab Rogan that time. For 8 points of damage.
Gave you a little loving, too.
So here's the key. You are poisoned. You are slow.
Anything else?
Not yet.
Incontinent, maybe?
All you gotta do is roll a 10 or higher. For each, or just once?
For once. Save as well.
At the end of his
9 or higher.
All right.
No, it's 10.
So, Rogan, it is your turn. You immediately will take 5 points of poison damage.
I'd love to.
The tentacles sink into you, and then it is your turn.
I will reaping strike it, and then I'll make my save.
Okay, you're at a minus 2 to your save.
So 18 plus 1 minus 2.
So above 10, so you are clear of both paralysis and slowness.
Keep that around just in case.
So, Seth, you're up.
Can I ascertain how wounded the creature is using the equivalent action?
They are neither particularly wounded.
Okay. I will use my cascade of light on the carrying crawler.
Okay.
Plus 4 instead of plus
3. A 1 is a 1 world around.
That is a waste of a daily power.
Bomber.
Whoosh. Does it do anything on miss or anything?
Half damage. Oh, it was.
Not so bad.
The daily powers all have a little kind of consolation prize.
Well.
It's still a lot. 16 plus 3 is 19, so it takes 9 minutes.
That's not bad. All right, Ashken.
It was going to get vulnerability 5. It takes...
Literally.
Take a shot. I think that's a 21.
That'll hit.
I think it's a 21.
It's a lot.
For 3 points. And I will move. Can you use a healing surge as a move action, or does that have to be a primary action?
You're a dwarf, so you can use a healing surge as a minor.
Once per
encounter.
Have you done it yet?
I haven't yet. I'll save it if I can.
You can only take a second wind. Uh-huh. Once per encounter, anyway.
Oh, really? Okay. I get it.
I did not think of a lot.
Yeah, now, of course, the cleric can grant you extra healing surges all the time, but there's no reason not to take it into the minor act.
I'll move around here and try to get sneaky with it.
I am going to phase step to here.
All right.
I gain concealment then due to my shadow walk ability. And I am going to curse as a minor action this one, and then Dire Radiance it. 16 versus Fort.
That'll hit.
10 points of damage.
They will rush up onto Seth.
Oh, really?
Yep. And so one of them is going to go right past that square, just like we did there. So we'll get an attack of opportunity for both of you.
Does that automatically give me the sneak attack possibility, or
no?
So it's an attack by opportunity. Can you use
basic attack? No.
Basic.
No powers.
It's 25.
That will hit.
13.
4 points.
And it's in position there, and it will chow down on Seth and miss. Apparently being hit freaked it out. And the other one will chow down on Seth as well and will hit for 7 points of damage. The green beastie will chew on Rogan. It has grabbed you with its tentacles again. So they're 9 points of damage, and you are poison slow.
Me too.
Rogan, you in fact take 5 points of poison.
I'm going to spend an action point to attack and be unstoppable.
With the ability position of strike, I can move something with my charisma modifier, in this case 2 squares.
Yep.
To waggle this guy here and there. Would that give him an attack
No. Shifting, pushing, pulling never does attack of opportunity. But it would get him off of them so it doesn't keep whacking at him.
Chewing on him, it's not chewing on him.
There is that.
I suppose there is
that. I'm going to do a Tide of Iron. It'll be a 26 armor class.
That will hit.
I will do 13 points of damage.
Right.
Is he large?
Yes.
It will push him back. I will step in the doorway.
Are you going to shut the door, or...?
That sounds great.
Okay. Slam! Made him close the door.
I will try to save. I'm still minus 2 off this, so that's a 9.
Oh. All right. So first failed slave. The target is immobilized. That was a very smart thing to do. Did you healing surge or something?
Yeah. Got back 6 points. That's how unstoppable I am.
That unstoppable is temporary.
It is.
Oh, okay. So, the door is shut, and you are standing at the door with your hands pulling it shut, and you cannot move. You are
You don't feel it all well.
You can still attack. You can still defend yourself. So on and so forth. You just can't physically move from that space. Seth?
Seth is going to do a healing strike on one of the adjacent creatures. That would be a 15 against armor class. That will hit. 4, 5, 6 points of damage.
All right, he goes down.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
I will surge good. Myself for free.
Ashken.
Stab it. We'll use the reboost to strike, or pulse to strike. 27.
Hey, it's going for it.
Well, so much for that dying. Eaten by the carpet.
4, 5 points.
It's starting to look pretty beat up. Tempest.
Using my Fate of the Void, I will have a +2 on an Eldritch Blast. So that is a 21 versus Reflex.
That will hit.
And he's already cursed for 11 points.
He's down. So as the other Fire Centipede crashes to the ground, and you are starting to look around, you realize that Rogan has got his hands up against the door. He's kind of bleeding a little bit. Doesn't seem to be moving a whole lot.
I will investigate. How is he?
I don't see them, so I am not close.
Are we out of combat?
You are, for the moment, out of combat. However, Rogan, you need to make one more save.
If I can give him divine,
you're still at -3. You are stunned.
Did I lose any hit points?
Nope. You're just stunned.
I will now give you divine aid, which allows you to use a saving throw using my charisma focus. So give yourself +3.
Got it.
All right. You shake off the poison.
Ran its course.
That was the one time for this encounter.
Okay.
I'm taking a moment.
You hear bang, 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 bang on the door.
I'm looking down that hallway.
Mm-hmm. Rogan looks a little bloodied.
Another 6 centimeters.
Can we all search for what's the screen?
You can, if you would like to, try to take a short rest at this point.
Based on what you heard in the last clip, we have actually started using some 4E condition cards. They're little tents you can fold up in front of you that tell you what the effects of being under a certain condition are. The ones I got were from DragonAvenue.com by Jim Goings, and they're little tents that say things like, you are immobilized. They're really helpful for helping clarify that stuff.
That way, Tim doesn't have to tell us every time what stunned is, what immobilized is, so that we can, as players, keep on moving with the combat.
I also highly recommend the official D&D 4E DM screen. In the right-hand panel of that, it has a summary of all those conditions too, which is probably the thing I reference on there the most. So other stuff that was interesting, the second wind power, I explained it again here to Dan. We had used it several times before, but it's one of those where because there's all these rule exceptions where the dwarf gets to use it as a minor action and that sort of thing, it does tend to bring up some questions even once people get to basics.
You also hear Jeff talking about wasting a daily power when he misses, and we have now made a new house rule.
What we do is we actually allow you to use an action point to regain the use of one of those encounter or daily powers if you'd like. And there are actually some powers that come up in future supplements of the game and so forth that also do that, but this is a little more generically useful when you're playing with characters that aren't making use of those things.
And it's really important for us, especially because we only have 4 characters, that we really depend on those encounter and daily powers quite frequently. And the way that Tim runs a lot of our games, the battles are back to back to back to back. So if you do have multiple encounters that are back to back, we do gain more action points, and it's a great way of being able to utilize those in a useful fashion for the entire party.
They knew the carrion crawler was on the other side of the door, so they asked, are we still in combat? Well, I had a couple options there. I could say, yes, you know there's a carrion crawler. It's beating on the door trying to get at you on the other side. But I chose to say, no, it's okay. You guys can take a short rest, blow a healing surge outside of combat, recharge your encounter powers, that sort of thing. Why not? Why not let them have that extra breather? I think it's much more dramatically appropriate. Someone's holding the door shut, everyone's taking deep panting breaths, trying to figure out what's going on, looking around them, and then they're like, okay, and kick the door open again, rather than saying, no, it's still one combat round. I don't think it adjusts the tension really enough to make it worth making it that much more of a pain in the butt for the characters. So in the next clip, the battle continues, the carrion crawler giving them a bit of a surprise with its entrance.
Well, the door actually opens toward you, so that would be tough.
All right.
Boo!
Can I kick the door open in spite of that?
Yes, if you kick it hard enough, it'll bounce off its frame and swing open.
Okay.
So you bang, and it's ching, and things open, and this thing comes rushing right out past you. And
past me?
Yep, because it is on the ceiling now.
Oh.
And it is going to be right straight above you guys.
Far out.
So that it can use its...
Ghost ability.
Are we new-ish or are we
sticking
new-ish?
New-ish. It is directly above all of you, so all of you are equally able to hit it, and it to hit you.
Kind of random attacks. That's what I did with the dragon. It was fun.
Yeah.
Gets it. The horse.
Yeah, nice. All right, so and it runs out onto the ceiling, and it's going to grab. I think we'll do the old style here. So it will attack.
Great.
And its tentacles swim down, and you duck down out of the way. And
far too short.
Tempest, you're up.
I'm actually quite tall. I am phase stepping.
In the room, on the bed, you see a body of a young girl dressed in a very expensive-looking silken gown of strange
She's beyond
style.
My help right now, though.
Yep, she does appear to be dead. She appears to have been stabbed in the heart, much like the other guy in the bed. And her foot appears to have been chewed on by this creature. She does look for him.
I'm going to Eldritch Blast him, okay. And as a minor action, curse him. That hits a reflex of 21.
That will hit.
11 points.
Seth.
I will hit it with a Lance of Faith. 17 against its reflex.
No, I'm sorry, that is one shot. Hushkin.
I'll make a positional strike against it. 18 against it.
Double hit. And what are you going to do with it?
6 points. I'm going to move it back 2 squares this way.
It is now directly between the two of you.
On the ceiling?
Yep, it is still on the ceiling. Yeah, it's...
He's 5 foot tall.
His personality...
He jumps up and just... breathes up just in the junk.
More like I poke it in the ball, and when it looks at me, I go like...
Seth Rogen. Right there. There you go.
How did that happen?
That's funny.
I'll do a covering attack.
Dude, I feel kind of lame now.
Seth. All right, there's another paradise there for you. Carrion Crawler reaches out. Oh, complete total miss. Tempest.
Complete and total miss.
Taking a shift backwards, that will hit versus reflex for the Eldritch Blast. 14 points of damage.
Dang. Mm-hmm. Seth.
That's a big one. I can use as many times as I want.
Ashton.
Crossroach.
Rogan. Come on, Rogan. Break out of your crap slump and roll some dice.
A little reaping strike. 19.
That'll hit.
Woo!
6 points.
You have seriously hurt it.
Meaning it's now bloodied?
Yeah. Its tentacles reach out for Rogan, and it will hit with the tentacles for 9 points of damage, and you were poisoned. Slow. Tempest.
Eldritch blasting it. 21. Oh, that's nice. 20 points of damage.
Jesus Christ, what did you hit it with?
An Eldritch Blast.
For 20 points?
Yes, because it's already cursed, so I get an extra d6.
All right.
The number of the dying shall be one.
Hoshkin?
Pull a dagger and throw it, making it an easy target. I'll have my daily power. 20.
That will hit exactly.
For 7 points. And?
Ooh, ooh.
It's slowed and grants combat advantage to me. I save will end both.
All right, Rogan.
I'll just... stand next to it. myself. I'll try to reflex strike.
Did you get to save last round?
I don't think I did last time.
All right, well, you need to. Otherwise, you'll be taking the damage. Right?
I would like to still use that as my attack.
Feel free.
A DA 29.
That will hit it.
10.
It falls dead to the ground. Bang! Knocking you down.
I'll save.
And you're good. Rogan has killed it.
Yay!
Not really. I think Tempest probably killed it. I just was in the room at the time.
In the room, you see this appears to be a young woman's bedroom. On the bed is a young woman.
And she looks somewhat familiar.
She does. She looks exactly like Alanada, the girl that you saw at the Bogman's hut.
Isn't that the name that appeared?
It is.
Why haven't these bodies rotted?
Because of the ritual that was done earlier.
She was murdered.
It appears so, and I have to believe that the other body was her father.
Yeah.
The one that once was stabbed with the tabard.
In the bed.
Yes.
I'll wrap her in the blanket on the bed so we can drag her around.
I'd like to search this room.
You open the cabinet on the wall, and in the cabinet is a gleaming crystal mirror. Scrawled in blood across the mirror, chaos shall set us free.
That's the same.
The ink is busy.
Or something that happened 500 years ago.
No, we said that the blood is only a week old.
Everything in here only looks like it's a week old.
True.
He might not have aged because...
He was here.
And thus frozen.
I'm going to examine the critter. To see if there's any way to draw some of its venom.
You may do that. You draw off a little venom into your vial. In the room, in addition to the mirror scrawled with blood, you find various sorts of like beauty products and little hangers.
Girly things.
Feminine hygiene products.
Exactly.
Girly things.
Girly things. You also find a number of books. You can see there's a bunch of books on the table. Many of them are religious texts, much like the one that you already have.
Is there a Dear Diary?
There is not a Dear Diary. There are also a number of nice jewelries, bracelets and such. You can say it's 300 GP worth of jewelry.
300 GP's jewelry?
Well, we should definitely steal from these people.
Are we taking 300 gold pieces worth of jewelry? Okay. Thank you.
There was another door around the corner.
Yes.
Are we going to dispose of her body in the proper fashion?
Yes, but let's...
I don't think she's going anywhere.
Yeah, we'll come back for her, as we will with the other.
Might as well make more fire.
Exactly. When we make a fire, it's going to fill this place with smoke in a very unpleasant manner.
You plan on doing it in here?
Unless you want to carve the bodies out, yes.
I think that might be wise.
Well, it's not going to be easy crossing that footbridge with the bodies.
Footbridge.
I think I'll be...
retracting bridge.
That was in the other place.
That was in the other temple. Sorry.
Forgive me. It's not going to be easy getting up through the hole in the ceiling with the body. Or two.
True.
Or five.
Well, I don't know if we need to. We can light them a fire there.
Then the smoke can get out.
Exactly. Smoke does rise.
You've convinced me.
So you're going to leave her here for now?
Yeah, we're going to come back.
All right, I do wrap her up in the light.
That last clip really shows why warlocks kick butt. Or for that matter, any spellcasting character. We have the opportunity now in 4E to have encounter powers where we get to use those all the time. It's not a one-shot wonder, kind of like Magic Missile of the past, where you get to fire it off once and then you're done. So please don't be afraid to go ahead and take those characters and beef them up a little bit. Go into combat. Don't need to worry about it any longer.
Wick, of course, would now take this opportunity were he here to make the point that that means fighters are terrible and horrible and really lame now in 4E.
Only if you have crappy dice.
The Carrion Crawler does come in on the ceiling, which really surprises people and makes it, I think, a completely different encounter than if it just had charged and hit Rogan straight on. So that's something that's really important to keep in mind.
This really changes the tactics and strategies that your characters can use within combat as well, and 4E provides a very nice platform to do that.
After defeating the Carrion Crawler, the characters did do quite a bit of investigation of the residence hall, searched around, made a lot of perception checks, read through a lot of books, dug through a lot of journals, found out not too terribly much that was useful. The write-up does have, I think, a better tuned explanation of what they did find. Then they decide to head back to the Amphitheater of Beauty and continue down the hall. The hall scene is cut out of the write-up, and I think you'll see why. More explanation after the clip.
You do find in one of the books a portrait of Ramardal and Alanada.
Yes.
Ramardal is wearing black robes with stars along the
headless.
So it seems likely that that was probably his headless body.
All right.
We know how the person looked like.
Not yet. Well, she's...
go back and follow the trail again.
She's missing a foot, but the tattoo on that foot would indicate that it's somebody of our modern time.
It's not her missing foot.
No, you're guessing her missing foot is in the Carrion Crawler.
Perhaps we should put the bodies. We should put the bodies together so that when we are leaving, it would be of ease.
We move that way, but we're not moving that way. We'll take her when we go that way.
Okay. So are you going to go down the other hall?
I think we should.
And after a few moments, you come to a kind of swelling in the hallway, and you see a huge hole that burrowed up through the floor, and it looks like it's all been filled in with backfill, but it's probably where those 17 things came from. Then the hallway continues, and after a few moments, you find yourself in the back of a secret door. Opening it, you find yourself in that big arch thing with a metal roof.
We see the muddy footprints again, then.
You do.
We best follow that.
So you head down the hallway with the muddy footprints. You do, after about 15 minutes of walking down this very long hallway, which is very nice and all, get the impression that you're not getting anywhere. Just keep walking, and it's like the tunnel between the B and the C concourses at O'Hare with the little dee 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 dee. You just don't ever really feel like you're getting anywhere. Just keep walking and walking.
You walk past the same Coke machine 9
times. Yeah, I got it.
Does it seem like we've been walking for quite some time?
The same wall, perhaps.
The paintings all look the same?
Wait a minute. You guys stay here. I'll walk down the hall. Is it the proverbial at some time he comes from the other direction and catches them?
Exactly.
So at which point do I see them appear ahead of me?
Almost immediately. I mean, you were like 15 feet ahead of them. And
if you had binoculars, you could see the back of your own head.
Just sling a rope.
Okay. A rope lands on your ankle.
So what do I see?
You see a rope kind of heading out and hitting Tepa's ankle. Looking back behind, you see Tempest with a rope up here.
So it's like I'm staring into a mirror that the rope is headed into.
So if you ran really fast, you just go right past us every time. That would be crazy.
I'll start examining the walls.
Yes. As you're looking around, you do see that the muddy footprints do continue kind of straight on. Although...
Are there multiple ones of them?
Yeah, exactly.
So
they fell victim to the same thing.
In fact, there's... I mean, not being a trained tracker, any of you, getting a feel for it...
But there's
probably 200-300 times.
They walked a ways.
Are there any crystal keys hanging out on the wall or anything?
No. However, you do see a socket in the wall, now that you mentioned that. It looks like it might fit one of those keys.
We've got two left.
The path in front of you clears, and you can see further down than you did before. And you see a long hallway stretching into the distance. You hear the sound of rushing water. There's a huge chamber up ahead before you. It's kind of hard to see since it's pretty far up there.
Are we coming from here?
Yep, we won't be getting quite here yet. Down the hall, you see this huge chamber with this beautiful stained glass and stuff, except that there's a giant crack in the stained glass here, and water is pouring into this room. And it looks like it's been pouring in for a long time, and there's a crack in the over here.
About a week.
It's been pouring through. Yeah, about a week. The water has flooded this whole sort of dais area,
so this is a sunken area, not a raised area?
It's a sunken area, that's right. And there's a crack in the floor right here that the water is pouring down through again. And you see a dead body right here. Of a gigantic, multi-armed creature.
It's a corpuscle?
Yep, it appears to be dead. And here, stuck into the ground, is a giant trident, probably 15 feet high. And strapped to the trident, you see Kontos, semi-unconscious. And that is where we'll pick up next time.
Oh, cool.
Okay, Tim, explain the endless hallway and why you had it in the original write-up.
The endless hallway was meant to be a distraction for the Suhagin that let them spend a whole lot of time trying to get through this hallway before they made it into the final room, thus providing an explanation for why they haven't really started the ritual to raise their leader until the PCs get there.
That wasn't really clear.
That wasn't clear. The hallway was kind of silly and way too cliche. Using the key to open it, the keys were only supposed to be for emergency use, so why would the hallway depend on them? A lot of stuff just didn't make sense with that clip, so that's why that whole thing got...
We consider our campaign a playtest for everybody out there at large, and you can see how things change as we do it.
What I will say, though, is I absolutely love how the cliffhanger turned out for this particular episode, where you do finally make it into the Amphitheater of Beauty, and there's this enormous six-armed Suhagin laying there. There's Kontos crucified on a trident. There's a whole bunch of Suhagin standing around, and it's almost the scene where the cultists are trying to raise Cthulhu.
Thanks, Tim. We all appreciated that.
More on that exciting battle next time on Return to Northmoor.
If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to leave us, you can reach us at the forums at spookyouthouse.com or on Twitter.
Our Twitter handle is RTNcast.
Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to Return to Northmoor, a podcast released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 2.5 license by Tim White and Kim Stone. Our theme music is Charge of the Valiant from Dronalyn's Tower, Legends of Cithilin Volume 1, Tales of the Long Forgotten, used by permission of its composer, David Alan Young. Find out more about their fantastic gaming music at dronalyn.com. Visit us and many other fine podcasts at spookyouthouse.com.